Hey, what's up, friends? Thanks for joining the Daily Journey podcast. We are so glad that you are here and hanging out. And my name is Scott Pontier, and I love doing this podcast, Daily Journey podcast, because it's basically about two people just discussing their daily journeys through the midst of life in an unprecedented time of global pandemic. And our conversations take us really far in lots of different directions. And so I hope this is helpful for you in being part of a conversation instead of being part of an isolation. So if you want to continue to listen to these, you can always subscribe with any podcast player that you choose. Just look for Jamestown Harbor Church and subscribe. You can also go to our website, jamestownharborchurch.org, and click on the Daily Journey series in our sermons page. But today is Monday, March 20th, and I am I'm excited about this conversation with Sherry Hoppen. I've known Sherry and her husband Craig for 4 or 5 years now, and she's just one of my favorite people to have a conversation with for lots of reasons. But Sherry and Craig are business owners. They own about 50 J&H family stores throughout Michigan, and so just to have some conversation a little bit about what it means to carry that responsibility right now, but also, as Sherry would talk about being a mom and a grandma and all that kind of stuff, is kind of a fun conversation. She also asks me some really, really interesting questions too, particularly about our governor. So that was Sherry is always good to ask a good question, but I loved this conversation with Sherry. And we also talk a lot about, her journey as a recovering alcoholic and what that has meant for her and that sort of thing. So we have lots in the conversation today. I hope you enjoy it. Here is my conversation with Sherry Hoppen.
Everybody's situation is uniquely different, but we're all being affected by the same one thing. So,
yeah. And that's the thing that I've noticed recently too, is because it's normal for us to also react to this, like, and get mm-hmm. angry about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But in a situation like you said, after 9/11 in your business, like, it's one thing because your employees, if they're getting laid off or that kind of stuff, might be upset at the decisions you all are making. Right. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, nobody can do that because they get it.
Yeah.
So where do we go? Well, apparently people protest the governor in Lansing, right? Like, right. There's got to be an outlet somewhere. And for some people, like, yeah, there is anger. And that's anger is an okay feeling. It's just, what do we do with it that matters, right?
But yeah. And it's interesting because it seems to go in waves. You know, even me personally, I go from, you know, anger, then emotional, then fear, you know, then anxiety, and then peace. Yeah. I love this. You know, it's like, it's just all over the map. And I feel like that's what's affecting a lot of, you know, people's feedback and the way they're reacting to things. It's kind of like, what mood are you in today? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's,
and can we have enough grace with each other? I think that I see that on the family level, like, and maybe you and Craig have that too, of like, oh, okay, I'm going to go in my room for a little while. And like, I get you're reacting, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But we have we're starting to have a little less tolerance for it, like, community wide. And even like, even for our governor, like, I get that she may be making decisions that I might disagree with or you might disagree with, but I do not doubt she's trying her best. Right. Yeah. You know, like, we all are,
you know. Yeah. I'm just like, I pray for our leaders every day, whether I agree with them or disagree with them, because yeah. that's the best way that we can support them, you yeah. know? And, yeah. And I've kind of taken on, I was the first employee to be laid off at J&H. I wasn't at that meeting, so I'm not sure why I wasn't invited to that one.
It sounds like you should have been at the meeting.
But, you know, in that, I'm like, okay, I'm not essential, but I'm not running the register or anything like that. But I just kind of went to, okay, my main job then is to be supportive of Craig and the kids that work there, but mostly my husband, who's just, you know, the weight of the world. And I like being that person for him. Because he's trying to be that for everybody else. So I was like, he needs to have a safe place mm-hmm. to go and to be able to vent. And I have learned that, I mean, I've always known this about him, but he, when he gets home from work, I don't ask him, I ask him, how was your day?
Yeah,
I'm
gonna sure.
Few words. And that, yeah. And I used to get really mad about that, you know, cause I'm home all day right now. I got 10,000 words saved up for you.
Like, yeah. I've like, saved it for you to come home.
Yeah. He's like, you're going to talk to Scott this morning. How many meetings you got today? Like, he's trying to feel like, how many words you got?
How many words are you going to report back to me later?
Exactly. You know, but after about an hour, he starts to talk, you know, it's like little things come out and we just, you know, we've been married for 35 years. So we do know each other's rhythms pretty good, but just like anything else, marriage and relationships is always changing as yeah. well. And I don't think that I want to look back at this as a time that we grew together,
yeah.
you know, even though it was hard. But
it's one of the things I've thought a lot about, like even just in terms of like the Sunday stuff that we do for Jamestown, it's, you know, it's a different medium. It's a different format. It's honestly a different audience because, mm-hmm. you know, like one audience is you and Craig sitting in recliners, right? Like, yeah. like engaging it. But another audience is, you know, a family who've got four kids who can't sit still. And like, but the thing I've thought a lot about is how do we help families develop language of intimacy, like a deeper connection by mm-hmm. having conversation together in a world where they typically weren't before, you know, like right. that's the opportunity we have, whether or not that works out for everybody, I don't know, but at least that's what I hear you saying too, of like, I hope we go through this and find more of that mm-hmm. by going through it together.
And I think those families with young kids too, at least, I mean, I know I was guilty of this back in the day. You tend to just think, I'll table that for later. My kids are little, you yeah. know, I can't do any of this right now. But I think it's important to find little ways to do that kind of stuff and make it a priority, you know, even yeah. if it's just, you know, trying to talk to your 2-year-old, you know, but there's, you know, you're kind of being forced into finding that because mm-hmm. you don't really have a choice. There's no,
you got no other option right now, right? Yeah.
No. Yeah. I mean, I do every once in a while have the urge to run to Home Goods and go, oh, Home Goods isn't open right now, you know, or whatever, but many places like that. But yeah. I just think that in many ways, you know, I know this virus wasn't for me or just for you.
Yeah.
But if I think about what God is asking of me in this, I think that he knew what every single one of us needed. And it does kind of remind me, you know, of the mantra, you know, the mission statement of Jamestown Harbor, you know, the finding your way back to God.
Yeah.
And, yeah. you know, so my thing every day is to be intentional about my time and not to waste it and to just do the best you can, you know, whether it's for you or for someone else, or when I have that urge to send Lauren and Steph a text that says, hey, we're going to watch the kids for you, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
When we'd probably, I mean, I do want to see the boys. That's not it. But, sure, you know, yeah. we get really comfortable with, you know, flipping on Netflix every night and, you know.
Yep. You can just do that. Yeah.
yeah it's like,
or there's opportunity to take advantage of, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah.
But well, 10 extra Harbor points for you for throwing our mission statement in the conversation today.
I didn't even have to look it up. So. No, well, that mission statement is something that I actually,
it matters.
Really love.
Yeah.
Jamestown Harbor. So.
Yeah, me too. Well, I brought you on here to ask some questions, so let's get into it, right? Like, what's I'm very curious to know how you've thought about shaping this conversation a little bit. So, why don't you hit me? What do you got?
Well, it depends. Okay. So first, I quick tried to listen to more podcasts than what I'd already listened to because I wanted to make sure I didn't repeat a question. So I haven't listened to all of them. So I
sure, hope
I
haven't.
And then I had to text Tanner yesterday and say, you know, dang it, you asked my question. You know. And help me out with this Enneagram thing in case I get asked that because I've never taken the test. So
yeah.
Assign me a number, which he wouldn't do. But
it doesn't quite work that way.
No, and you probably know my number just from me saying that. Like, just figure it out and let me know what it is, you know? Yeah. But
you could be a couple of different things, I'm sure.
Yeah, that discussion got started. But kind of funny because we already kind of brought it up a little bit. So my biggest question, and especially based on, you know, some of the things like, you know, feedback that we've had in business and, you know, like we were talking about, if you had 5 minutes to sit down with Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Hey, it was Trump. I changed it to Gretchen. So, what would you want to say to her in that 5 minutes that would have hopefully a lasting effect in her remembering her conversation with you?
That's a good question. That is a good question. That's an interesting question because I wonder how people will hear that depending on like when they hear this.
I said, there are things about her that I think are, you know, she cares for our state, you know, so I'm not asking that in a negative tone.
I know you're not. Yeah. But the question is like, what would help a person like that remember? Honestly, like the first thing that comes into my head is just to acknowledge with her, like, I can see that you're doing the best you can. And I appreciate that, you know, like, I do appreciate that. I think I would say that to anybody who's in a position of leadership that is making decisions right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some people that I might look at and go, I don't think you're doing the best you can. Mm-hmm. But I get the sense from her that that is true. And I kind of would want to encourage her in that. And I would say, listen, leadership is hard. Leadership is lonely. Not everybody is going to agree with every decision you make. There's no way to win, you know, mm-hmm. and this right now, it honestly isn't about winning. You know, it's about being as faithful as you can to the calling that you have. And like God has placed you in a position of leadership and he's placed you in a position of leadership for our state at this particular time. Like you're it. So mm-hmm. God's got you here. Be as faithful to that calling as you can. Like, and also, you know, and I might also say, like, get the smartest people you can around you, because even though you're trying to do the best thing that you can do, like, you are not smart enough to do this on your own. None of us are.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I honestly haven't paid close enough attention to go who's around her, you know, in this.
Right.
I can't imagine she's, you know, making this decision on her own, but.
She doesn't come on with a team, you know, like President Trump does. You know?
Sure, right, yeah.
Dr. Z wants to speak and the vice president, you know, she doesn't do that too quickly.
No.
So,
but I can't imagine that she doesn't have, she's sitting in a room by herself going, what's the next step I'm going to take?
Yeah, what am I going to do today?
Yeah. You know? So, like, listen to advisors. Like, now is not the time for pride. Now is not the time. And I don't get that sense from her. Like, there's this weird underlying current of, well, you know, she might be on that list for VP candidate for the Democratic like party. And like, all I've ever heard from her is, we're not talking about that right now.
You right. Know, which, right.
Like keep doing that. Cause politics is not helpful right now. We've seen it. Like it creeps in, people inject it in and it's super not helpful. It is time to be like, how do we help the most people stay healthy and move together? And also, right now, people do want to see hope, and that's where frustration lies, I think, with a lot of people of going, the restriction continues to restrict, and I don't see any hope for when it won't.
Right, right. So, we're hearing other things that are giving you hope, and you're like, why isn't our governor trying to give us some hope, you know? Yeah.
And I get how it's hard to know. Like, I also read a bunch of articles. It's like, well, when this is over, this is what's going to happen. And it's like, you don't know that.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. We don't have any idea.
No.
So she's not trying to give us false hope and trying to not lie to us about what's true. But
right.
That would also be a helpful in the conversation to say, I mean, that's the trick I have as a communicator, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to challenge people and go like, let me move you to a hard place and face a hard thing. And also let me give you a picture of what that could look like on the other side. I do wish I heard more of that in the conversation of saying, mm-hmm. you know, this is why we're doing this, because on the other side, it's going to be this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Keep doing the best job you can. Trust the people around you and help us have a picture of the future too, would probably be the things that maybe, I don't know. How would you answer your own question? How, especially in your position as owning business and stuff like that, you might have a different thing that you might want to say, but.
Maybe, you know, I look at everybody and I don't have the best feeling about her.
Yeah.
Having two things that really strike me wrong. So first of all, I have quite a few years working for the pregnancy center in Holland.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that, and I don't know the exact logistics or, you know, the facts behind it, but it has been said many times that you can, you know, medical service for abortions is still available.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you need, unless it's an emergency, don't go to the hospital. So all of a sudden an abortion is an emergency. So that is really tangled with me.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's hard.
That sits inside of you in a way that just like, yeah, that, mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about that.
And exactly. And especially as I know the pregnancy center that I used to work for, that I'm still really good friends with the executive director there, and they're struggling, you sure. know,
yeah.
there's not the, you know, funding and all that kind of stuff to keep them going. And, you know, we all know in about 6 weeks, there's going to be a lot of pregnancy tests needed, you know, so, you know,
yeah, yeah. And the funding's not going up. It's likely going down, right?
Exactly. Like, cause you know, they're nonprofits, so it's totally donation based. And
yep. yeah,
that's
yeah.
hard. That's hard for a lot of nonprofits right now. And my other thing with Governor Whitmer was, in my own life, you know, being, you know, very involved in the world of recovery from addiction. And that is kind of my life purpose right now. That liquor stores are essential.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really hard. But our,
which is different than liquor being available in the grocery store, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, why, I understand their business too, but the state of Michigan benefits from liquor sales. Mm-hmm. Last night we heard a commercial that just floored us. It was, you can buy lotto tickets online.
You can right. Yeah.
And she was encouraging that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so first of all, don't go in our store to buy a lotto ticket.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stinks because lotto is a big part of business, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I want to encourage it, but just like we sell liquor and sure. yeah. you know what yeah. I mean? It's like, it is what it is. And her saying that to, the way I heard the commercial, I was like, yeah, let's just do some online gambling while we're at it. You know, that's a real, real good, you yeah. know, way yeah. for the people of Michigan to spend their time. You know, you can drink, you can gamble online, you know? So I feel like she doesn't do anything to discourage behavior that's going to end up hurting our economy and our people even more. And
sure. Well, I mean, can't you make the argument though? Like, and this is the argument I've from the people who are like protesting, we need to reopen our economy right now. Like basically the byline of that is yes, more people are going to die, but the economy is more important. Right. And I get that's a huge overstatement too. Mm-hmm. But couldn't you argue like the point of, yeah, but if Michigan is benefiting from liquor sales and lottery stuff, like that's pro economics, right? Mm-hmm. I personally, like, that feels gross to me too. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that.
Yeah,
you could also argue she's trying to, or whoever is making that decision yeah. is trying to keep
and
our economy.
The fact that we sell lotto and booze, which,
yeah,
you know, it's making good choices, first of all. We have to trust that people are buying them and making good choices. We don't know that. We don't have any say over that, but just the declaration that it seems more of a need. And then something came across my desk last week that said drunk driving is up 25%. And I'm like, oh, that's helpful, you know. So people are, you know, driving to the liquor store to get more, or they're, you know, having happy hours or whatever. So
yeah.
There's, and I understand with her too, there is just so much. She can only do so much. She can only say so much.
Yeah. I mean, we can't regulate behavior, you know, mm-hmm. in a way.
I know.
Like, that's the hard thing is, like, right now the government is trying to help do that in terms of how we congregate, and let's limit some things at certain stores so people aren't hanging out there and like trying to make it. But then you start using this language of essential, and it's the wrong language in some ways, mm-hmm. because it makes us have these kind of conversations. I think this is essential, but you don't. And so now we're going to have an argument. That doesn't help.
And the fact that the essentials that I was just talking about, those are ones the government benefits from.
Sure. Right.
They're in lotto and even, you know, abortion. But, you know, 10 years ago, I would have said, well, great, because I think all is essential, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also a huge problem because I don't think I've ever had more people reach out than I have in the last 2 weeks. Like, I could sit here all day and answer emails and
Like addiction standpoint stuff from alcoholism. What do you tend to find your response to folks in those kind of messages?
My response, based on the individual, some of it is, it's about their spouse. And some of it's about, when someone makes that decision to hit send on an email that says I'm not doing good, or I'm drinking, yeah. and I'm scared, or, that kind of thing. I know how hard that is to ask for help.
Yeah.
And you usually do it in a moment of, liquid courage. Yep. And, so I might write back, but I might not hear anything for the next couple of days because they're just like, I did that, know?
Yeah. Let's pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah. There's just like this push pull of, I want to quit, but yet I don't. And I don't think I can right now, So it's just, I try, I do, a lot of Zoom meetings for recovery. And I always tell people you can have your audio on or, no video, whatever sure. you're most yeah. comfortable with. But the biggest thing you can do is let people know that they're not alone.
Yeah. And show up, be there. Like, we're here for you. Like, mm-hmm.
yeah. And online is comfortable. People yeah. can say or do things without, years ago, to walk into a meeting was like the ultimate step of courage.
Right. To physically put yourself in the room at that church basement or whatever it yes. is. Yeah. yeah.
Yes. And then, oh my gosh, what if someone you know was there, And,
well, I would imagine for you in particular, like, you fit the mold of prominent people in the community, right? Whatever that means, like, you own local businesses and stuff. And yeah.
yeah. So that explains why the very first meeting I went to, I tried to look homeless. And, not kidding.
That was your strategy.
I just wanted to blend, and sat down and there's two of our employees. And I'm like, oh, crap.
That didn't work at all. But then you quickly figure out it doesn't matter, right? Like,
I did and I didn't. I didn't have a good so the people that were there, one of them from our company, was there because he had to be because of a
court order.
Court order had to get a slip signed. So the respect of the anonymous part of it wasn't there. And that's how everybody found out at Jane H. Oil that Craig's wife had a drinking problem, So it is what it is. But, that's not the risk in going there. The risk is, and I always say too, the thing that was my biggest secret, like, I was terrified of anybody finding out, is now what I talk about with anybody,
Right. Isn't that interesting? Right. Like, I was holding on to it so much and now it's the most open thing about me. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's who I am and it's made me who I am. And I remember sitting in a few meetings and this guy would always say at the end, and I'm grateful to be an alcoholic today. And I think,
Yeah.
Not grateful for that, but I am.
Yeah. Kind of now. Right.
Like, yeah. I don't like who I was before I started drinking. I don't really care for the woman that was drinking, and I don't care for who I might be had I not been challenged with that, or our marriage. I mean, we're like second marriage people now. It's like, we have a whole new lease on how to do life together.
And you wouldn't have been here if it weren't for those experiences, right? Like, and they were painful and they stunk, but yet here you are. And it's like, this is the life I would have wanted from, this is the marriage I would have wanted for us.
And at the time, if someone would have, actually God was kind of dangling that in front of me. And the only thing that I had to change to start, at least, was not drink. And that was impossible to me. And that
first step. Yeah.
And I look back at that now and go, why was that so hard? but it was, it's an addiction, anything like any substance or whatever your addiction is, it looks way bigger than even though the life you're being offered, that you're being promised,
The pain of changing feels so much higher than the pain of like staying in the crappy situation you're in, right? That's the fear. Sure. And I do think about that for people who are struggling with that right now. I had Steve on, a friend of mine, a little while ago, and he was the day we recorded, he was 11 months sober that day. Mm-hmm. Right. And so he's kind of in the spot now where he's can say some of the things you're saying, like mm-hmm. to be in that spot and reflect on, oh, this is so much better. But for a lot of people right now, they're in the middle of it. And they're like this sort of the opportunity, as we've talked about of right now, is to go, will this huge disruption allow you the opportunity and the courage to make that change and to take that step? Or is it going to reinforce like where you've been? And like, mm-hmm. that can be a very fine line to be standing on for a lot of people right now.
And I feel like there can be a lot of endings that aren't happy after this, because there's relationships that are being destroyed. I mean, there's ones that I know of that are being destroyed right now in homes due to, you know, one of them drinking or using or whatever that is, but there's no way out right now.
You're forced to,
I know a lot of people that are living together, but living very separate lives. And as soon as this is done, you know, the line's been drawn in the sand, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Which is why
like an online meeting is so important right now. Like mm-hmm. I know AA has a ton of them. Honestly, if you're listening right now, go to intherooms.com and you can find some AA meetings there. The stuff you're doing isn't AA though. I don't think, right? Like that's not the organization.
No. Right. I think AA is a great program.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I didn't get sober with AA, but I did learn a lot.
You started your journey there though, right?
Yeah. But I wasn't in a place of wanting to make a permanent commitment when I was going to AA. But you know, all these little seeds are planted,
sure.
you know,
that
get you there. And I think that the 12-step program is good. And I'm a bigger fan of the 12 steps written for Celebrate Recovery. Mm. That's a great program, you know, done by Saddleback Church. So I'm a bigger fan of that, but I really did not use a program. So it was me and God and God's assistant Craig. So
so the stuff you're doing now is just like coming alongside and supporting people, like mm-hmm. creating your own spaces.
And I think that what I did learn from my journey is that when someone can stand in front of you and say, I know how you're feeling and really know how you're feeling, that's the person you want to talk to.
Yeah.
And I always relate back to years ago, my little brother was killed in a car accident. So he was 24. I was 28. 4 years previous to that, my stepbrother was killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. So long story short, when my stepsisters came to the funeral home, I wanted to talk to them because they were the only ones that knew how I felt in that moment.
Yeah.
There was nothing that anybody else could say or that I could even make sense of, but they knew how I felt. And that's the only people that I wanted to be with. And that's how I feel like it is with addiction. You know, you want that reassurance. You want someone to tell you that, you know what, it is, you can do this. If I can do it, you can do it. And sometimes you're sharing your story way more than what you ever planned on, because you want people to know that it wasn't just like, oh, I drank too much wine at book club and now I'm free. You know, it's like, no, it was serious. It was destroying and it was, you know, lucky to be alive sometimes. So I think that gives people hope. So that's a lot of, and my biggest thing is making it a faith-based journey. There's not a lot of that out there. So, developing some sort of program, not necessarily steps, is kind of my goal. So I'm working on, but, in the meantime, I just, you know, want to get the word out that
you want to help people, right?
I want to help people.
Well, I'm struck by what you said too about, you know, having someone like who's kind of been through there, like is one of the most important things around that. And even circling, we're far afield from our original question at this point, which is totally fine.
My second question was related. So it's gone.
But I feel like for a person in any kind of leadership right now, whether you're the governor of a state, or the owner of 50 gas stations, or the pastor of a church, right? Like, that's so true for us right now too, because man, if I can just be around other people who get what it's like to lead in this thing right now, and I can just, even if we don't have any good answers together, like knowing that like, yeah, we're in this right now together and we're all figuring it out together too. Like that goes a long way for people. And so whatever it is that we're leading in, whatever it is that we're doing, finding a connection matters.
Yeah. you said in one of, maybe again, it was the one with Tanner, but that Ray was failing. I'm not sure. Anyway, you talked about how you get to meet with all these other pastors.
Yeah.
Almost every day. Yeah. And you're, you know,
bouncing. Whenever I want.
Yeah. And you're bouncing ideas off each other, or if you have a struggle or you're stuck. And it's the same way with recovery. It's the same, you know, or the same way in business, like you just said. It's when you find someone else who is either in the same boat as you or has been there, that's probably the most comforting thing. And I mean, that relates back to God too.
Yeah. He's been,
you know,
I mean, that's how he meets us most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's,
it's
like we need to hear that voice through somebody else.
Yeah. And we're just, we're following and we're trying to be like him, you know, the ultimate goal or what he's created us to be. So
yeah,
it's a confusing tough world out there right now. So finding connection for people is really, you know, the main goal, I guess. So,
it's one of the reasons I like doing this, because a few times a week I have a meaningful conversation with somebody and we find some places where we're connected. And, you know, that makes me feel like I'm okay as a person right now. Like,
can be
the chaotic energy of where we are right now is like, I don't know what's going on out there. Am I okay as a person? Where do I fit in the world and all that stuff? And,
I mean, even when you text me and say, do you want to, I'm like, why does he want to talk to me? You know, it's like, you don't even.
Cause you, I like you.
I mean, I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like planning and I'm like, no, you're not supposed to plan what you're going to say. You know, it's just conversation, you know? So I liked the approach, you know, let's just have a conversation.
Yeah.
And that's how I like to talk to people too. But
that's true.
You know, it's just interesting because you said something I think earlier about your neighborhood. Anyway, I rode bike through your neighborhood not too long ago with little Landon on the tag along bike whatever. And he is saying hi to everybody, everybody, you know, he's like, hello, I'm riding bike with my Mimi. Hello. I'm right. And I'm like, yeah, honey, they can see that you're riding bike with Mimi, you know, and they all look like they'd like to jump on the bike too, you know, but I was just struck by all the people in your neighborhood. It was a beautiful day. So everybody was outside.
Yeah.
But they were all in their own driveway.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, that doesn't, usually if I ride bike through that neighborhood, I'm like, excuse me, pardon me, excuse me. And I'm sure I'm going to hit somebody, but it was weird. And I thought everybody's doing life the best they can, but in their square, within their perimeters. And I think
and what we're learning, unfortunately, what we're learning right now is it's scary to go outside of your square. Like I went to the grocery store, like I said, and it was like, I had a constant like high layer of anxiety and fear.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's just like you're kind of always on the lookout and on the watch and like, what invisible thing is going to get me? What am I unfortunately doing to someone else and I don't know? And it's just like you come home and you're like, okay, you know. And I don't like that. I don't like that it feels scary to go outside. You know what I mean?
No, and I think it was Tuesday, you know, the days all run together. No idea. Yeah. I said to Craig, I said, I'd been home for like 5 days straight, which, you know, you kind of get comfortable.
Yeah.
That the world is not as bad or as, you know, there's not as much fearful stuff going on as what you might think, you know, and if you leave the TV off or stay away from your phone, it's even better. But I had to go out then. The next day, some errands for his mom and for myself. And so, you know, I'm all hazmated suit up or whatever. I was like, so I have a mask, you know, because you're supposed to wear a mask now.
Yeah.
And I am literally going like, it's like peer pressure in high school. Like, I don't want to wear my mask if everybody else isn't.
I don't want to look stupid.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to look like overdone, you know? So, So first door, I'm like, oh yeah, wear the mask, you know? So,
yeah.
Coming home though, same thing. My anxiety was so high and I thought it's because we get out there and we see and we feel like it is serious. It is bad. It is, you know, there is reason, you know, to be fearful of this disease. But I was also struck by something else. So, and you just kind of said it too. So this virus, we can't see it.
Right,
you know, it's like you'd love to all have a blue, this light, that
would, you a know, blue light like, that could identify. That
would,
it, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. So, and there would be none on our gas pumps. Just saying. But anyway, so we can't see this. So all of a sudden, because we're being told this exists, we fear it.
Yeah.
Okay. So when this virus isn't around and we're not wearing masks and say it's not even a physical thing, we trust people really easily.
Yeah.
I trust that that cashier handing my money back to me my whole life, I don't walk away going, I'm going to die. You know,
right.
She just gave me a virus, you know,
yep.
Or that this person that, you know, talks to me, I don't think later they were stalking. You're going to follow me home and I'm going to die. You know, it's so trusting.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to be gone.
That's going to change. Right. Yeah. The image of I get masked up to go outside and then I come home and I can unmask myself. And it's like, that's going to continue whether you got a physical mask on or not. And that's sad. And I think, you know, not to get too churchy on it, but when we planted the church, like that was one of the things, I wouldn't have used the mask language, obviously, but I know that we live in a community where there's a lot behind people's closed doors that we don't share with each other.
Exactly.
And I mean, you have your own story of that. We talked a little bit about that today, right? But mm-hmm. The best thing for us is that we learn how to get inside of people's doors and share our stories together. And that's where God helps us find our way back to him. And I feel like that's the thing we as a church have to continue to move forward on whenever the after takes effect, because mm-hmm. we're going to be too used to like closing that in now.
Right.
And that's a problem. It's a problem for our mental health, our emotional health, and especially for our spiritual health.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, our church was one of the first places that I felt, well, I didn't really feel comfortable, but I was put on the spot. And we were at one of those Sunday night gatherings, Fairhaven. I think it was when launching the Uncharted.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Was that a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had just started like this tiny little blog that I hope no one read, you know, and, you know, trying to be quiet. And I had quit my job and, you know, wanted to really commit to this. And someone at our table, you know, said, Sherry, what do you, you know, someone said to Craig, you know, you guys work together. And Craig goes, well, she's not really active in the company anymore. And she goes, well, what do you do? And I'm like,
am I going to take the mask off right now? Or am I?
Yes.
Not? Yeah.
I just kind of went, okay. I like to write things, talk to people. And it's like, you could have heard crickets in the whole room, I'm sure. And I just went, and, you know, and this person very sweet goes, oh, what do you write about? And I'm like, and recovery for women, you know, because I'm in recovery. And conversation went on and it was fine.
Yeah.
But my heart was about ready to, you know, I felt like I was just, why don't I just sit there naked, you know, because I am exposed, you know, and
I'm so vulnerable right now, depending on how you react to what I just revealed, right?
Yeah. But I think it was shortly after that I shared with you, you know, my story and, we talked about it and used something in church. I don't remember what it was, but I felt like that was like exactly what I was looking for, a safe place. And it wasn't going to be my decision when I was going to be challenged to talk about it, the secret, you know? And that's what I feel when I go through, you know, like you said, you look at all these closed doors and you just wonder what's going on, you know, behind. And you just want, I love that Jamestown Church is a place that people can feel safe doing that, hopefully. Yeah.
And revealing it doesn't mean we have to scandalize it either. You know, like, again, I tend to be, my first approach to people is grace. And it's like, I tend to expect the best of people and go, even if you are making a mistake or a bad decision, or you screwed up, or you got a decades long narrative in your life of terrible, terrible things. Like, I'm assuming that, all right, well, that's okay. God still loves you. And that there's a hope, and that there's a story in there of you try to do your best and let's find it. You know, like, I think if we can do that with people, you know, I get mad at people not wearing their mask or walking the wrong way down the aisle, but I probably got to give more grace to that too and go, all right, but that's okay. We can figure out our way forward together from here. And after this is done, let's unmask and still be people together who can give each other that kind of grace.
Yeah, totally awesome. Agree.
So what's your second question? that took us a while.
So we kind of answered one. Well, we did answer one, but then Let's see. I have two and I'm just trying to decide.
You're trying to pick one.
I know. I'm trying to pick one. Sure. Okay. So this is kind of like a little quiz. This is really, because I had one all written out. And then this morning when I was doing my devotions, I'm like, well, there it is. But so I changed it.
Okay.
So I have a prayer journal and I'm one of those people. I mean, I have like an extended family of squirrels in my head all the time. Like there's not just one, they're yelling at each other, you know? So I'm not good at, so I write things down to focus. So I basically write my prayer every morning, but I do follow kind of an outline. And one of the things that I do is every morning I ask myself four questions. And as I say them, quick answers in your head. Okay.
Oh, okay. I don't get time.
Question to think. Is coming from here. Okay. Yeah. So just, so the questions are
lightning round.
Huh?
Lightning round.
Lightning round. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Who am I? What am I here for? What matters most and what matters least? Okay. So based on the questions and the answers in your head, how you answered them right this moment, do you think that those answers are going to be different when we come out into the real world again?
Wow. That's a good question, Sherry. Good job with that one.
Oh, I can't take any credit. It was a God thing this morning. So
yeah. You kind of references that these are questions you often ask yourself, right?
Every morning.
Yeah. Do those questions change for you before all this? I mean, day to day, would they change?
So far, no, but except for the fact that I think I've expanded on them more. Like,
yeah,
my short answers, you know, who am I? I'm a daughter of the King. That's usually what I write down. You know, and what am I here for? Kingdom work, what matters most, his work, what matters least, distractions, material, earthly distractions.
Yeah.
But I find myself going a little deeper with that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Part of it is I hope, you know, as an answer to your question, but, I think the who am I part, might change for people because this experience has offered them an opportunity to understand who they are. Like, I don't think honestly who I am will change, but I think me coming to a better awareness of who I am and how I tick and why I make the choices I make, I think like the awareness of who I am will can change because there are in many ways, there are a lot less things to distract me right now. You know, I'm a lot less busy, you know, for example, right? So I think that has the potential to change and people can come out of this experience facing some new things about them. Like I always hope that for people. Mm-hmm. I always hope we're taking this inward journey, but for many of us, it's quite difficult. And for some of us, it takes a global pandemic for us to even start that process, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think the other three will change for people.
Yeah, especially I think what matters most.
Yeah, I think mostly because what will change is people will have been asking these questions, whereas before they weren't, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of us, we move through our lives and we're like, I don't even take stock of kind of what matters most. It's more about what do I want?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, very much so.
And so what do I want is less of a question for people, I think, in the future, more than like, well, what matters? You know, what matters most and least? And like, and therefore, what am I here for? Some of us have had some clarity around that before this experience. For some of us, this experience is giving us that clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, this morning, what did I, I wrote something about, so I read a book by T.D. Jakes called Crushing. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal. And he talks a lot about how, you know, we're seeds and we're being, you know, like right now we do feel a lot of the time that we're being buried, you know, like we're, but really is a seed being buried or is it being planted? Mm-hmm. You know, so what does this look like? Because we're all seeds in the ground right now. We're waiting to bust out. And, you know, you can either come out of it, and this is my take on it, you can either come out of it a weed, you know, I mean, seriously, you can come out of it a prickly weed that's just out to annoy the world and you're mad at the world and that's all there is to it. And, or you can come out with something, you know, being something beautiful, you know, or something that's meant to nourish like a vegetable or just, you know, to give people hope like a beautiful flower. But all those things, you know, you don't come out, you should never come out of any experience, especially one like this, without knowing that somewhere in there, God has an expectation of something you were supposed to learn from it and carry forward.
Or at least an opportunity, you know, like to say like, it's here if you're, I mean, that's why part of me is always like, I honestly hope nothing changes. I guess hope is the wrong word. I want nothing to change because that's what I want, right?
Yeah.
But I hope everything changes, you know, and I hope, these are good questions. Who am I? What am I here for? What matters most? What matters least? Those are questions organizations are going to be asking now, right? Churches are for sure of like, who are we now? I mean, I had this conversation this week of going, we know how to do Sunday morning public worship experience, you know, like 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning at Riley Street Middle School. Like we know how to do that when we can be in a group of 400 people. We know how to do that. We're learning how to go, well, when you're sheltering in your home, how do we engage our spirituality on a weekly basis? Like we're learning how to do that.
Right.
What we're not planning for yet, and what I've started planning for right now, is what about the in-between space when they say 200 people is too much, but 20 is okay?
Right.
Like we also have to ask, who are we then? And how are we helping people engage their spiritual journey then? And I've got some ideas and stuff, but like we got to be ready for that too. And I honestly feel like we probably have to be ready to turn that dial on any given month, because who knows what our world is going to be like. Are we going to have to shelter in place for another month after in the fall? Are we going to, you know, like how is this going to, the fluidity of our identity has to be able to be locked in a little bit, you know? And I think we as people need to, when we ask someone to plant a church, we're always asking questions about their marriage. So if you were planting a church, I'd say, Sherry, tell me about the hardest thing you and Craig have had to go through in your marriage. And you would tell me, frankly, you've told me, And then I would say, oh, tell me about another one. And then I would say, oh, tell me about another one. Right. Because what I want to know is your marriage bomb proof? Like, have you been through enough? Have you been buried enough that what grows up now is a plant instead of a weed? That I can trust you next time you go through a really hard thing, like planting a church. I know what'll happen to you and Craig when that happens. And this is like that experience. Tell me about the hardest thing in your relationship, in your relationship with God, to yourself or to your marriage or whoever. And this can be that shaping experience that can bomb proof, you know, or it can grow into something that's totally not helpful. And we get a choice in that a little bit right now, I think.
Yeah. And a big part of that is making sure that, you know, especially in a time like this, like staying close to God, you know, being in, like I said, I'd used the word intentional before, like just trying to be super intentional about that, because I can waste a day like no other, you know, but I think I'm big on setting a timer, setting an alarm where I just got to check in, you know, and I'm not this, don't get me wrong, I'm not this big spiritual, like, ooh, I'm just praying all day, you know, it's like that timer will go off and I'll think about what I'm going to pray about. And then all of a sudden I'm like, brewing a nice coffee and I'm like, wait, I was supposed to pray, you know? So, you know, it's just,
you're giving the intention or the effort to the intentionality. And that's one of the reasons why I love you. And I like, so glad we get to talk, because I knew you would bring that into a conversation too. So,
I mean, and it's hard not to wonder why we're in the middle of a virus while it's snowing outside on April 17. Yeah. You like to be, I mean, my big thing is to get outside. I know that's yours too. So riding bike or anything like that in this, but I feel like that's also part of the challenge. So that we have to step up to. But you know, one more thing you said, you know, what is that? I hadn't thought about that with, you know, like social distancing, like, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to be reopened based on social distancing. Well, that's a lot of chairs at Jamestown Harbor. If you're putting them, you know, 6 feet apart, there's not enough gym to handle that. So,
And you honestly think that that's going to be the way where, like, if you're in the building, how am I not going to come and give you a hug? We got to, we got to figure,
like, elbow bump is it? And I'm like, no, the elbow bump is stupid. I'm not going to elbow bump anybody. It's so awkward. You know, it's like, what if they don't know the elbow bump, you know, but I mean, maybe that's going to be the opportunity, not only at church, but with a lot of other things where there is smaller groups and you get together related on what's relatable to whatever you're going through. Like maybe I would get in a group with a bunch of addicts. Who knows? Yeah, you know, or Craig would be with businessmen or ones with small kids. I don't know. It's interesting how that's going to, what that's going to look like. So,
well, as you said, like this is definitely opportunity for us to hear something from God and engage that. So.
Definitely so.
Well, thanks for being with us today. And, thank you for asking awesome questions and just having a good conversation with us today. I'm just so glad you joined. Thank you.
Thanks.